Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
All right, take it away. Mets live on KEX.
Hey guys, welcome to a new winter, Cults and Culture, and today we're going to be talking about the 2012 album by Mets, their debut album, and here talking to me about it is my friend Dan from Dreadful Discs. How's it going?
Pretty good. How you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you. So Dan, Mets, who are they? What's their deal?
So they're a Canadian three-piece band, classic lineup. Bass, drums and guitar, basically banging out some raw punk rock, although it's not quite that straightforward. In there, you know, you'll have elements of noise rock, garage rock. Mm-hmm. It's quite a nice review on AllMusic, describing them as a ball of heavy genres, lumping together everything, noise rock, post-punk, hardcore, no wave, or any style that might punish a pair of eardrums. And, I can relate to that because my ears are still ringing.
Yeah, mine. So we went to see them last week, and it was only really at the end of yesterday that my ears stopped. It was actually uncomfortable to the point where it made me feel a little bit sick. it was really, you know, I've had it before, obviously, when, you know, your ears ring afterwards, but never to that extent, I don't think.
Yeah. And it's not cool. Tinnitus is a bad thing.
I know. Tell it was a Tintin.
It was a tiny venue, wasn't it? I think it's probably the smallest venue that we've seen the band in.
I'd actually hazard to say Birthdays, when that was still around, was probably actually smaller. It was more longer, whereas this was more wide. But it was Studio 9296, I think it was, in Hackney. Quite a trendy area. And it was a fairly decent gig. It was just very, very loud and very raucous.
Which is perfect for them. I think in a way it was like the most fun gig that we've seen them play. Because it's become a little bit of a kind of annual pilgrimage for us now, hasn't it?
Yeah, we've been to pretty much every London headline tour gig that they've done since the beginning. And do you actually remember when we went to see... So the first one was at Birthdays, I believe. And do you remember we went to see them and we had got there a little bit early and we had a drink and they came up after their sound check, sat next to us, and then were basically going through their, like, five-year plan. And they were like, when are we recording the second album or whatever? And we were like, oh, my God.
I wonder if they... Did they hit their five-year plan? I don't think I actually heard what they said.
Yeah, I was trying to listen in. But they were talking about recording the second album, when they're going to have to do their next tour and all this stuff. And, I believe they did it. But do you remember what also happened that night?
I do.
go on.
Well, we were sitting having a very civilised drink in the bar upstairs when we were told to push off, basically, because our table was reserved. I don't remember seeing a sign, so that's not very British. It's just not cricket.
Do you remember who it was reserved by?
Yeah, because then we got moved about basically 2 feet to the left and went and just sat at the bar. So we were kind of like waiting and watching to see who'd turn up to take our table. And it's only bloody Harry Styles.
Yeah. Celebrating his birthday at birthdays, which is closed down now. It's a brew dog.
With his mates, with the big face off the radio.
Yeah, Nick Grimshaw. So it was in the papers. He's a Radio 1 DJ, for anyone that doesn't know. He's Radio 1 now. Was he then? I can't remember. But the big radio station over here, basically. And he's gay. And all the headlines the next day were like saying, oh, Harry Styles and Nick Grimshaw an item. That they were like, they went home together and all this stuff. Do you remember that? And we were thinking, how weird that it was all taking place during this, like, you know, rock gig that we were at downstairs.
Yeah, well, I'm glad they had a great night because we spent the initial part of their evening just like giving them evil looks until the band started.
Yeah, and it was really weird when you think about that first gig to when we see them now, because that first gig was a lot. I felt like no one else really knew the music there. It was more like the musos and the reviewers and people like that, rather than the gig we went to on Friday, which was a lot more buoyant and just the whole place just going absolutely crazy, jumping up and down as a rush pit, which lasted the entire set. And it was pretty mad. But even though that was 7-8 years ago when the album came out, when we saw them, when they were playing the album, the age has remained like 16 or whatever. It's like that hasn't changed. As everyone's getting older, there's still these young kids coming in and listening to them, which isn't bad for like a band that's coming close to 40 now, if not already.
Yeah. But there's still like that really good, old school kind of punk ethos. There are a lot of old dudes around, and I like that. You know, you said it was quite raucous. It felt like a vintage punk crowd, like. Lots of crowd surfing, some dude lost his shoe.
Yeah.
All of that was going on. It was really lively and just like had that brilliant kind of chaotic edge.
Yeah. And I mean, that's one thing that a lot of people say is that with Mets, is that it's all about the live experience with them, which, you know, I agree with. It's still a great record on its own and it's great to listen to. But to really get a feel for it, I highly recommend you watch them live.
Yeah, because essentially to me, listening to the album again for this discussion, I was like, this is just their live sound, or it's trying to capture the live gig, just pump it up a little bit further.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And do you remember what happened at the... Do you remember what happened at the beginning of the gig when we were standing there? I mean, of course you remember. It only happened like 3 days ago.
Who wants to tell it? You tell it, because he approached you, didn't he?
So, that's chap. Yeah, so we had this... There's an ongoing debate about, firstly, about when a show starts. So we asked the bouncer what time it started, and he said 8, and we're like, oh, okay. And it wasn't. It starts at 8. So we arrived there at 8 because I didn't want to miss the support bands, and we were the first ones there. So we walked in, got a few beers, and we're just hanging by the stage, and this little dweeby guy comes up. Nothing wrong with being a dweeb, but he's quite funny. Came up and was like, oh, are you USA Nails, who are the support band? And I was like, oh, no, sorry, we're not. And he was like, oh, okay, because I wanted to tell them how great their album was. Yeah, okay, I'm sure it was, but yeah, we're not them. Okay, because I was trying to get like a copy, like a demo copy, because I've got my own radio show. Yep. Still, it's not me. I'm not part of the band.
He wouldn't have it, would he?
No. And then I was like, is he just trying to make conversation with us? And what was also weird is that I was going through the New Winter Instagram, which is @anewwinter for anyone who's listening. And on my first thing that came up my feed was this couple like doing a peace sign to the camera or whatever. And I looked around and he was standing next to me. Well, yeah, he was on the other side with his girlfriend, and it was like, "Is this the same guy? Is this the same guy?" And it was, and that's the end of that story.
I still think you should have approached them.
Is this you? Who's this on my phone? How did you get here? What's the meaning of this?
It would have been glorious.
Yeah, and what it was because I had followed a bunch of people who are Mets fans or whatever, leading up to the show because of this very episode that we're doing right now that you're listening to right this very moment. And yeah, so obviously he's there as well. And he came up on my feed. It was really weird. How strange.
The other funny thing about the USA Nails story is that when the guys came on stage, because we didn't know them, we hadn't seen them before, you could kind of see where he was coming from.
There was a
situation. Because we were also with our friend Rich, weren't we?
Yeah.
And bandmate.
Yep, sales.
So we just looked like kind of like slightly less palatable version of USA Nails.
Yeah, slightly less rock and roll looking. And they're not even that rock and roll looking, so they're saying how lack of rock and roll we look. Yeah, that was quite funny. And then, the second band, I mean, I wasn't really going to go into this, but because we're talking about it, were Phils, which was an LA girl band, but the drummer was a guy, but three girls up front. And and that was okay. They did Aneurysm by Nirvana at the end, which was pretty good, but it kind of, I think, showed up the fact that the rest of their songs weren't that great. There's one song in particular I really liked, and I can't remember what it's called, but they're called Phils, and I think their Instagram is Phils the Band, which is okay. I mean, I don't know what you thought.
Yeah, I really liked it. I'd definitely be willing to give, you know, their album a go. But they kind of remind me a little bit of Chastity Belt, which might sound like a bit of a lazy comparison, because obviously they're kind of like, they've got that early 90s alternative slacker goodwill kind of vibe.
Yeah, it's definitely there.
But musically, I think it was there. Yeah, there was a lot of crunchy kind of 90s guitar rock pop, but also some kind of like hazy jangly stuff as well.
I really enjoyed them. It reminded me a bit of Breeders, and I don't know why, not specifically, but as you said, it's that kind of like 90s, not like post grunge, but Dinosaur Jr. maybe, kind of slacker rock. Also, like, it has elements of being heavy, but it's not actually really that heavy.
Yeah, it's very sort of sweet and melodic as well in places.
Yeah.
I really loved the Aneurysm cover because I think that's really dangerous territory to do Nirvana covers.
Yeah.
As we know. And I think they really pulled it off because they looked like they were enjoying it and they were into it and they were coming at it from the right place. It was sincere and it just, it rocked.
Yeah, it was good. And what did you think of Mets? I mean, it was pretty much how we've seen them all the time, which is incredibly loud, incredibly sweaty. The only thing I would say is that the noise, the sound wasn't, acoustically speaking, wasn't as great. It was kind of volume over anything else. And also, I couldn't see the drummer that well. He was kind of hidden in the shadows rather than, you know, having a light on him. Hayden Menzies. Yeah. And which is a shame because I really like watching him drum. And he's a good-looking guy as well.
likewise, I usually like watching the drummers anyway, but especially him, trying to see what's going on because he's constantly busy. And he's had a haircut as well.
Yeah.
I quite like seeing him flinging all his hair all over the place. But for people, visually, it's quite exciting.
Yeah, he looks a bit like, you know, Thor, a bit like Chris Hemsworth. In a sense of like, you know, quite a blonde, pretty boy, but also a little bit, you know, rocker.
A bit dirty.
Yeah. He's an artist as well. And funny enough, years ago, because I followed him because of his art thing and the band had posted whatever, and I got into a mini conversation with him about his art. And then I think I said, oh, I think I'm actually seeing you guys in like 3 months or whatever. And then... I didn't hear anything back, and I think he probably thought, oh, it's a bit stalkerish. So I'm not asking for us to hang out. I'd obviously, you know, stepped over an invisible line of some sort. Tell us a bit more about this album, because all I know personally is that, obviously, released in 2012, it's by the guy from Holy Fuck. I believe, Graham Walsh, and also a guy called Alex Boniphant, who I know did, as in I read that he did the Crystal Castles first two albums. Anything else on top of that? Because that's kind of all I've got. There's not really that much out there about the album.
So what did those guys do? Because
What have they ever done?
Boniphant.
I don't know. They just produced it, whatever kind of producer does. Oh, the only other thing was that the guy, Alex, I think his name is, the front man, the guitarist, yeah. His dad does the photos. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah. So, funny.
Because they're really cool, actually, the photos. They kind of remind me a bit of, like, the Smiths. Like, visual.
Yeah, I can see that, yeah. They're black and white, the actual photos. The last album, Strange Piece, was like a drawing, an illustration, I don't know how she said it. An actual album cover in terms of one that's designed rather than a photo. Not that you can't design a photo, you know what I mean. But yeah, the black and white photos, the first two albums. It's his dad that did it. But yeah, they do look quite moody and they kind of capture it quite well. If you look, the cover for this album is a school child. It looks like kind of with his head resting in his arms on a desk and Metz kind of blurring, like right across the middle, massive, blurring out his face, but covering his face and all this stuff. And I think it's got something to do with that, like, youthful frustration and, you know, rebellious kind of nature, and which comes through in the album. But, yeah, I don't know. When you look at that album cover, what does it say to you?
Yeah, it looks very 80s punk rock to me. It could be a Minor Threat cover.
Yeah, that's a good comparison.
The album, just to go back to the band, like you said, it's Hayden Menzies on the drums. Alex Edkins is the lead guitarist and singer, and I can't pronounce the other guy's name, but he's called Chris, and
he plays the bass. Seem to do quite well. You said that all right.
There's a bit more of it. Slorach.
Okay.
If this ever makes its way back to the band, I apologise, Chris. So they were formed in 2008 in Ottawa, so a good few years before the debut album. Again, in the way that a good punk band goes about progressing, building up an audience, I think they were just gigging around. They released three singles starting in 2009 on the small label We Are Busybodies. Never heard of it. Presumably a Canadian indie. At which point, by 2010, they must have attracted the attention of Sub Pop. To me, that was quite exciting when this album came out, just seeing it on Sub Pop, because obviously for a lot of us of a certain age, that's very resonant. And at the time it came out in 2012, to me, Sub Pop had kind of moved into a space of really putting out a lot of good indie, indie rock, some kind of like folk rock, all very good, but it had, you know, moved away from the early 90s sounds that, you know, is synonymous with them for a lot of us.
Yeah.
So this was quite exciting. It heralded kind of like a return, bringing in a big noisy punk hardcore band.
And yeah, apparently they kept applying to Sub Pop. They were adamant that they were going to be signed to this label. And you can't blame them because it does feel like a perfect home, really, for that sound.
Great that they persisted.
Thank the Lord.
All to learn from. So the album came out October 9th, 2012.
It's my mum's birthday, by the way.
Did you get it for her as a present?
Yeah. Mum, listen to this. Who said a happy birthday? We brought the cake out to just threw the cake in her face. Take that, you fucking car.
I love the idea that your mum's maybe like following the progress of the band from these early singles and was really looking forward to getting that album on her birthday.
Yeah.
It's like, finally! They're going to go stratospheric.
Yeah. You got me Lighthouse Family. No! It's all wrong!
The album is very well received.
By my mum.
but, yes. And the general public. I mean, if you look at the kind of ratings it was getting, you'd think it was Sgt. Pepper's. Pitchfork Media, 8.5. Pop nice. Matters gave it 9. NME gave it 8. The BBC gave it a positive review.
The whole of the BBC?
Yeah, Auntie as a whole recognised it in a positive light.
Good.
AV Club gave it an A. And on Metacritic, a score of 82 out of 100. So universal acclaim, really, across the board. The criticism, really, centres around the sort of sameness of the sound and some of the songwriting.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think that's a valid point, and it's something that we'll come on to a bit later when we go through the album track by track. But yeah, some of the songs do follow kind of the same formula, even, you know, they're essentially sometimes they sound almost exactly the same. But we'll come on to that.
Yeah, and it's something that I find that I struggle with at the gigs, because a song starts and I'm like, yes, it's Rats, and then it isn't. And then the next song starts and I'm like, Rats! No. And in fact, they didn't play it on Friday. I was very disappointed in that.
Yeah, there is there's a track called Rats. It's not just Dan acting like, you know, a 1940s man that's missed the bus or something.
Rat.
Yeah.
It's a very versatile song, because you can change it to Cats. So like, I could come around your house and say, Sam,
yes,
you've got cats, which you have.
I've got cats. I've also got hats. And mats, which sounds like Mets. And so the circle is formed. Yeah, why didn't they spell Rats with a Z?
Oh my God, that would have put them over with the kids.
Exactly. Idiots. It's like their band name. They're named after the New York Mets or whatever team. Now, I did hear that they were literally like, people like, so, you know, what's with the name? Metz, the name, is actually a German town that's like in the middle of nowhere. Essentially, no, that's not fair. It might be a fairly decent town. I've no idea to anyone who might actually live in Metz and be annoyed that it was called a little town. When asked about it, they're like, I don't know, we're like, maybe we were on a tour bus and saw it. Like, that's kind of how much thought they've given their band name. But it's one of those words that I suppose, you know, doesn't mean anything really to anyone. And now it means something, which is kind of one of the best, you know, when you are naming a band, it's kind of what you want, is that it becomes synonymous with you rather than, you know, a word.
The actual city.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I've actually been there. I went there, and it's in France, actually. I was on a road trip 2 years ago and stopped off. And I've got to say, the album made more of an impression on me than the city.
Did you say it was in France, not Germany?
It is indeed.
Oh, in how? France. God's sake! Sorry, I'm going to whip my ass with a French baguette.
Some of those mats.
Yeah, exactly. And my cats. Should we talk about the album itself? I mean,
let's do it.
We get into like the heavy stuff, the meat of the album. So how many tracks are there, Dan? Including the hidden track.
Including the hidden track, then you're looking at 11.
Oh, watch out.
However, I mean, I think we should consider the album to be the 10 songs, because that's what was pressed onto the vinyl long-playing disc.
True. But if we're not going to hide some bits at the end of the podcast where we talk about the hidden track like you would do a hidden song, we are going to talk about it in its own merit, and it will last probably about 5 seconds because it's actually quite shit. Anyway, let's get straight into it. It's not even a hidden track. Why put it on there? We'll get to that. That's right at the end. You don't want to skip forward. We'll keep going. So the first track is Headache. And all these titles are really nothing-y, kind of punky, throwaway titles, I would say. And so are the lyrics, but we'll come on to that. But Headache goes a little bit like this.
It's the highlight of any gig. I get so excited when they do that.
Yeah.
And they kind of stand, or Alex stands, doesn't he? With no kind
he's not,
of,
he's not sitting down.
No. God, they they really need to introduce, actually, an acoustic suite into the end of their set, where they all sit down and then rise simultaneously at the crescendo of the music, a la Boyzone.
Just not playing, just going...
But they do that thing, and it's it reminds me of Steve Albini when Shellac used to do Wing Walker, because he looks like he's pretending to be a plane.
I have to take your word for that one. But yeah, it's a good first track to have, because it's straight away, it's hitting you with those... with those, that drum sound. And the thing is, this whole album is that, unlike, you know, other rock albums maybe, the drums are very much at the forefront of a lot of these songs, and which is good, because it really, they're really good. And each time it hits, you know, that snare or anything, it sounds like a gun. So it's literally, yeah, like you're being hit by like a shotgun in this intro bit, and then like when he's doing any fills or rolls, it's like a machine gun like hitting you. It's a really like visceral kind of feeling, which, you know, really adds to that whole entire sound. But yeah, this song, it's got a cool guitar riff. And I remember reading somewhere that there was a review of this album saying how Alex plays his guitar like a drummer and the drummer plays like a guitarist. And I can kind of see that, if you know what I mean. I can see where he's coming from there. You know, guitar wise, hits the notes hard. And it's, in this song, it's a slight offbeat with the drums, almost like how a bassist would perhaps play. So it makes it really impactful. You're really hearing each note is thudding into your very being. You also hear a second guitar in there that's playing a loose chord in the background, which is quite interesting. Behind the riffs, this comes up again and again throughout the album. You've got these like cool riffs, but also there's, yeah, this background loose chord playing that's kind of going on, that's kind of not only making it a fuller sound but also making it a bit more interesting. And it's catchy. The drums sound cool. Yeah, they are the real kind of focus of the album. They're not just keeping a beat, they're, you know, playing their own like hard-hitting melody in their own right. And you talk about the vocals, generally they're quite high, quite close to breaking into screaming. Yeah, sound again quite post-punk, it's not really singing a melody as much as like making, it's kind of done with a conviction, it's making a statement or adding another texture to the sound. It's very aggressive, can be quite whiny in a good way. He's more announcing than singing, and yeah, this song in particular is just full of rolls. Lots of drum fills that are incredible, to be honest. It's full of different beats. It keeps it interesting, but it's always coming back to that main riff each time. And that's what, again, kind of happens throughout on the album. It ends on a frenzy, and within a couple of minutes, you're done. It's fast, it's frantic, and yeah, it's fun. Great opener, and it just really sets that mood. It gets the heart thumping for the rest of the album. I mean, what were your thoughts? Was this you know, when you first heard this album, when you first heard this song, what did you think?
Yeah, exactly. With this song, it establishes the Metz sound for the rest of the album, but it differentiates itself with that quite clear, like, vocal hook.
Yeah.
That sort of chant. Obviously, as you've mentioned there, like, the drums are really special. not just in this song, the whole album, the band, I think, really, that's what is partly kind of what makes them so unique. It's interesting you say, you know, he plays it like a guitar, because he's really, really busy, and you'll notice this if you go and see them live. He's always doing something, and often, you know, as a drummer, you might return on the verse back to the hi-hat and the snare and just play like a 4-4 beat, and especially with like hardcore punk, that's often the case. You just play it really, really fast. But he's looking for other things to do. It's quite tribal.
Yeah, very tribal.
There's a lot of tom work going on, and it just means that it's constantly unrelenting, and just really exciting.
Yeah, it's interesting because I always think, like, how is he even, you know, coming up with this? How much work is there kind of going on, you know, or do they just enter the room and just start playing? And apparently it's the latter. Apparently they just go in and these songs come up, or they just throw them about. But I really think, like, with what the drummer Hayden's doing, it's like this part of me thinking he's going back and he's listening to those songs and he's thinking, you know, what can I do here? What can I do there? Mm-hmm. How would this work? How would that work? And bringing it back. So where they quite nonchalantly say, you know, oh, you know, it's all kind of in the room, I'm thinking, I don't know, because that's stuff there that you can't just, you know, bash out. I mean, maybe yeah. He can. Maybe, you know, he is that amazing, and he probably is. But it seems like it's like meticulously thought about, I would think, anyway.
Yeah, maybe. And I think, not to do down the guitar work, and I don't know, maybe you'll expand upon that later, but for me it's that drum sound and that all those patterns that kind of are the main thing that take this away from just being kind of like straight hardcore punk and bring it into the realm of noise rock and like post-punk. They just introduce a different set of rhythms and make this a more expansive sound.
Yeah. And yeah, I'll kind of get into it a little bit, but I kind of think that what a lot of the guitar work and the vocals are doing is there's a lot of crescendos, there's a lot of mini crescendos, there's a lot of build up, and I'm not just talking about the build ups that are in the songs. I'm talking about each riff in itself, each, like, you know, four bar basically is its own little build up and release, which, you know, with everything combined, it, you know, makes them really satisfying songs to listen to. And a lot of that's to do with the guitar work. Lyrically, it's nothing to write home about, basically. So I'm not going to go into too much of the lyrics for each song, but it kind of matches the music. It's frustrated, it's angry, it's full of can'ts and don't wanters, you know, a bit like Ramones. annoyance, you know, there's feelings of isolation, anger, not being able to connect to people or the world. It's defeatist. So there's this kind of like teen spirit, pardon the pun really, but not much more than that. There's no real meaning here. There's no kind of stories behind the songs. It's like, and especially, and the lyrics for this song kind of show that, you know, I can't move, I can't stay, I've got to get away. You know, got nothing on, something missing. It's always like the negative, basically. It's always that frustration. And that's why, like, mixed in with that music and that, it really kind of builds that thing inside you of being like, you know, you just want to build it up and let loose. So they've really like tapped into something here that is really successful and makes it a really good listen.
Yeah, just to sort of not undermine you, but just thinking about like Nirvana and their sound and how people used to go, oh, it's really negative, you know, the mainstream. And I remember Dave Grohl saying, no, it's so much fun to play. It's really positive. And yeah. Just picking up on, not my thought, my original thought, this is AV Club made a point of saying, like, Metz isn't a statement of nihilism or finality. It's actually bright. And again, like, you get that if you go and see them live. It's just really good fun, although the lyrics kind of based on that kind of like old school punk kind of philosophy.
Yeah.
And it's all kind of like kitchen sink and a bit degrading and frustrating and angsty. It's all done in the spirit, I think, of like positive energy.
Yeah, I mean, it's very self-aware. It's kind of meta-Mets almost. but yeah, not to be like, oh, it's like, you know, depressing or something like that. it's, you know, these, bear in mind as well, these guys are in their 30s when they when the album was released, so there's no actual kind of like, you know, yeah, like real teen anger or anything like that. It's, yeah, just kind of capturing that energy and that spirit. And again, we talked about this with like Horrors as well, but a lot of songs that, you know, kind of connect with people are usually ones that are quite triumphant or, you know, celebratory or whatever, but are done with like a tinge of sadness in like the lyrics or what they're about. And this is kind of it. It's a very like fuck you song, and it sounds quite negative and all this stuff, but it's actually, you know, cathartic and a positive thing. And it's all done, it's not done from, even though it gives the impression of it being like angry and all this stuff, it's not really, as you said. It's like, it's very positive, it's a lot of energy and all this stuff. It's just, you know, lyrically, yeah, it's kind of like just more of a tone thing to fit the sound rather than anything else.
Yeah, it's kind of stylized. It's the right words to get across the right attitude.
Yeah, exactly. So the next song is Get Off. Let's have a listen to Get Off. Well, that was Get Off. It starts with a kind of like jingly, jangly, interesting guitar riff. It's, you know, again, it's very simple. It's got an interesting melody to it. The bass is really simple here, but all of them, you know, they're kind of keeping up the pace of what we've just heard. It has some interesting breaks and, like, you know, weirdly, it sounds quite poppy to me. The chorus is... it's kind of like almost like a moment of madness in this rather like stable riff beforehand. So it's generally quite cool. I love the bridge here as well, especially where it's just the guitar and then the bass and the drums kick in at certain points before it breaks into this solo. It's a really, really great part where it just feels like fun and noisy. And through the basically the bassist is keeping it all together by just having that quite simple bass line, whilst everyone else is just kind of having fun around it. There's that big build up until the end, and it's really short, really simple, and really powerful at the same time.
So yeah, Get Off, it's quite interesting because they obviously selected that as a highlight from the album. The album was nominated for the Polaris Prize in 2013, which is kind of like, I suppose, the Canadian Mercury Prize. It's just for good music across any genre. So it made the short list of 10 albums alongside bands like Godspeed You Black Emperor, who went on to win, White Horse, Young Galaxy, Purity Ring.
I like Purity Ring.
And so on and so forth. But yeah, to sort of announce and promote the Polaris Prize, some 7-inch singles were pressed up, and this was like a joint release through Sub Pop and Scion. I don't know if you remember or know about like the Scion label. It was quite interesting. Barley. I think it was I think it was a venture by Toyota.
Sorry, what are you talking about? Car brand bought out a record label.
Brilliant. Yeah. It was part of their attempts. Basically, they had some car that they wanted to sell to like young first-time drivers. Right. So they put a huge budget behind promotion. It's quite cool. Instead of using that in traditional ways, they used it to set up a record label and just release stuff by like really cool underground bands, but they didn't really pick necessarily bands that I would associate with like young college students that are just buying their first car. They put out weird stuff by like the Melvins, and mostly like promotional only stuff that was just
going away. I tell you what, that's one kid basically who was tasked with doing it by whatever the agency or something. And he was like, I'm just going to put this money where it needs to go, bring out some actual shit that I'm interested in, rather than stuff that's going to like sell the car.
Or I can imagine some like really jaded, like 40-year-old stoner. He's like, yeah, Melvins.
They're still cool.
Get them back out there.
Brilliant.
I wonder how many cars they sold.
A lot still, probably, basically the... I imagine. But on the basis of the record label, I'm not sure.
The label's it's done now, so I don't know how long it lasted, like maybe about 5 or 6
quite long,
years.
Though.
Yeah, look them up. There's quite a lot of like really weird and cool, interesting releases. This one, it was only 500 copies, so it's a real collector's item. Like I said, just one-sided single, so Get Off on yellow vinyl. But yeah, obviously they, or Sub Pop, thought highly enough of this track to use it as a kind of highlight from
nice.
The album.
The next one is next song is Sad Pricks. Let's have a listen to that.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Sad Pricks. Dan, do you think they're talking about themselves?
I imagine they're talking about some people from Ottawa that they held a grudge against. And they're like, this is our chance to get something down on tape for posterity.
Or maybe it's how they're dealing with impotency.
It's a more... inflammatory title than Brewer's Droop, isn't it?
Yeah. Brewer's Droop.
Is that, we often call it in rural Britain.
Never heard that. Yeah, so I'm not rural enough, clearly.
Yeah, too urban.
Too way too urban. So yeah, Sad Pricks. So it's a bit of an interesting one here. So it's a bit more darker. The bass has a bit more, you know, depth and meat to it. It's quite heavy, quite low in the EQ here as well. The riff again here, I don't really mind. I don't think it quite has the hook of the other songs. It feels slightly repetitive, I have to say, for this song at least. His screaming is good here, and it's pushed quite far back in the mix, which is probably for the best because it's kind of monotonous, and that's, you know, something I've said before where... It's not really got a melody, but here it does feel like it's the same thing again. Around the 2 minute mark, it kicks out to just the drums with the guitar coming in before they head back into that main riff. Again, that's the kind of feels like it's the Metz formula a little bit, and it's fine. It's a little cheap. It's a little, you know, I don't want to say boring, but it's a bit more of the standard fare of a Metz song. But you know, like most of these songs, they don't really last long, so you kind of, you know, you get through the ones that you may not like so much anyway. And it's not that I don't like this song. It's just I don't feel as it's as strong as the other ones. So the next one coming up is, Dan, it's your favourite. It's Rats. We're finally going to play Rats.
Yes!
Let's have a listen.
Yeah.
Dan, was it everything that you hoped and dreamed of?
I don't get tired of this one. I love it.
Yeah, it's good. It's probably one of my, if not my favourite track on the album, I think. Again, it's especially since we just had Sad Pricks, which was quite standard. This one feels like it's doing a lot more here. So it begins with it's just bending this one note on the guitar. And that's what I love about it, just having that allows the drums to be really interesting here. And each one of these riffs is, like, as I was saying before, is its own little build up and climax, which, you know, as a listener is super satisfying to listen to. The bass is doing something slightly interesting here and there, but generally the song goes a few interesting directions, and that itself makes it a much better listen. I mean, one of the things I always go on about is that I really like it when there's a lot of variety in one song. Not that it's like, you know, going off on one and completely crazy, but when things kind of still feel like they fit together, but they're actually quite different. And Rats is a good example of this, in terms of, you know, the Mets songwriting. And then, yeah, it's got this almost chanting sensibility of, you know, you got rats. before having another breakdown. But it sounds like it sounds like they're playing something completely different. And I love this bit. It influences me, I think, anyway, in terms of like songwriting and stuff like that, just because it feels like it's doing so much and it's just such a frenzy and you're just struggling to kind of keep up with the song. Then that guitar riff, you know, drives it again, like in the beginning. It's dirty, it's fun, it's different, it's cool, it's raw, and I love it.
Yeah, this one is just so visceral. Those guitar breaks with that kind of like screeching sound, there's a pause where you kind of get a little release, and then there's absolutely hammering drums right up front and kind of like bloody in your face. The screaming, the vocals, you know, when he's saying about how you've got the rats, I mean, suggestive of like something worse than a rat infestation.
Yeah.
You know, it could very well be, you've got AIDS.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of weirdly like, it's like someone with an anxiety attack and you're shaking them. You got rats. Like, you can't sleep. It's like, oh my God, I can't sleep. You're right. I've got rats as well. It's all going wrong. It feels like that. Like, wake up, man.
It's a bit melodramatic.
Get
in that
with
way.
It. It feels like that.
Definitely a big slap in the face.
Yeah. I mean, is it about drugs?
I hope not.
Yeah,
I hope it's not. Just actually about some rats.
So do I. It's literally
this could have
like...
been on the soundtrack. This is like, you could put this, you know, on Record Store Day, they do that like side by side limited edition 7-inch.
Yes.
They could put this on a 7-inch with Michael Jackson's Ben on the other side.
Why?
Ben, it's from the soundtrack to Willard about creepy guy.
Yeah, played by Crispin Glover, isn't it?
Crispin Glover, yeah. And people always say it's actually like Michael Jackson singing a heartfelt ballad to his pet rat.
Is it?
Well, people say that, but I feel like maybe that's been misconstrued because the song was the lead theme from Ben. Sorry, I said Willard, but Willard was the sequel. The song Ben is from the film Ben.
What? Okay. So it's not about a song like to his first victim or anything like that?
No, it's to the rat. He forges an unhealthy relationship with his rat,
so
the character
weird.
In the film, not Michael Jackson.
Right. So where does Crispin Glover come in?
He's Crispin Glover.
Is he the one?
No, he's...
So hold on, is this
you're
film
you're thinking about the remake?
Yeah, and that's when he's watching that girl from the tree, and then he's friends with his son.
Yeah, I haven't seen that film.
Yeah, and then the son's actually come from 1985, which is what's weird. So he's just like a kid. Have you seen it?
No.
Yeah, and then he's got like a car that goes through space and time.
Is this Herbie? Hang on.
Don't you remember it? And then they go to like a high school party.
We've gone very off track here. I know it's difficult to think of Crispin Glover and imagine him in anything other than Back to the Future, but it did happen.
Did you know?
Actually, I tell you, right, in the original, Ben, that role is played by the actor who was also the dad in Bigfoot and the Hendersons.
Yeah, so we'll go on to, let's listen to Knife in the Water. You know, Dan, when you're washing up,
yeah,
you've got to be a bit careful sometimes because, you know, when it's all bubbly and if you've got a knife in the water, could cut yourself.
I know. Also, when you're recycling tin cans, push the lid in because if you put your hand in the bin, then you can cut your hand. That's what happened to me.
Oh, really?
So, domestic tips.
So the problem with Knife in the Water straight away is that the beginning sounds almost identical to Headache, which is a bit annoying. And I feel like it's a bit cheating, really, to be honest. But, you know, I'll play the two of them together and you can see what I mean. I mean, you could just say, oh, it's just opening with the drums. But it's a little bit like, it's quite similar.
Yeah, I rest my case.
There's no wonder they're back to, you know, not back to back. So by this point, you're kind of getting used to the formula here. So for me, it sounds quite similar to Sad Pricks as an actual song, but it does a bit more with it. Problem being is that the pauses here don't feel quite as show-stopping as they did before in any of the songs, really. It's really simple. It's got some strange chords beneath the hard riffs, which I quite like, which is quite cool. The vocals here are a bit more screamy, so, you know, something a bit more chant-worthy. And the breaks here are great. They feel really tense, which is quite cool, but then it's over. Again, it's very short, and it's one of those songs which works, I think, a lot better live than it does on the record, because it feels very, very angry. But, yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit sluggish here.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. It's It's okay. It's all right. But, yeah, I wouldn't say it's one of the best tracks on the album. And it's one of those tracks where, like you were saying before, with it being quite repetitive and that being a criticism, songs like this, you're kind of like, yeah, you know.
Yeah, this is where it starts to, yeah, bog it down a little bit. Again, I think one criticism I read was that, you know, I mean, the album's like, what, half an hour?
Yeah.
And one criticism is that it starts to feel dense and it's a bit like hard work at some points. And I think, yeah, tracks like this start to sort of bog it down a little bit.
Yeah, and especially with the next track, which is Nausea. Which it just basically just sounds like experimental noise. Not necessarily a bad thing, but yeah, as you said, you know, if you're already struggling to get to this point, you'd probably have turned it off as soon as you hear this. The sound quality, they've made it sound like it's been like run through a tape machine or something, or like it's been dumped underwater or something like that. And it's this like weird, like mid-album break and almost like a breather, some kind of like weird palate cleanser, but instead of being fresh lemon water or something, you're just licking grit. but yeah, it's a bit more soft. It's not as aggressive as the other songs, so I suppose it is kind of a little bit of a, you know, pause in the action.
Yeah, I quite like it in terms of you know, as a bridging track. I think it definitely needed something after Knife in the Water just to differentiate the sound a little bit from what's come before. And then you're into kind of like the latter half of the album.
Yeah, and then again, we're kind of in a real... All these songs are pretty much great for the most part. So yeah, let's listen to a little bit of Wet Blanket. So yeah, Wet Blanket might be my favourite song off the album, actually. I love the drums here, very fast, very angry. The bass is cranked so that those notes, you know, really pack a punch with the drums. The guitar is playing another really weird, really incredible chord behind it all. And the verses sound like really evil. And it sounds like they're playing around with that, the same beat, but in different ways, which kind of keeps your interest piqued. I love the build-up section here as well. It reminds me a little bit of Drain You, that bit, funny enough. And it's just these strange noises. Yeah, it goes on for longer than you think. And it sounds great. And when it actually breaks, those drums attack like a fucking machine gun and really hit you. Like you're being like mowed down by the music. It's great. So yeah, I really feel like this is a masterpiece track, and it's pure, like, if you want to show someone like the best of Metz, this would be up there.
Yeah, it's a great song, and like you say, it starts to introduce some slightly different elements, again, taking it beyond that kind of just noise rock, just punk. It's a bit more playing around with some sort of like feedback and ambient sound.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great one. And it leads on to another great song, which is Wasted. Let's have a listen. So again, like the other tracks, it's noisy. It's got a dirty guitar riff. The verses sound horrible. The guitars sound like they're almost out of tune. It's desperate vocals. And then the chorus is almost like a chant, this layering of vocals. This middle eight comes out of nowhere, essentially. It doesn't sound right, which is great. And then it breaks up and the drums bring it back to the chorus. And it's got this great ending, another build-up, and they do like their build-ups. And it slowly fades out as if it goes on forever and ever, this little earworm. Like you know, you just caught a glimpse of this song as it was just like traveling by like a fucking train or something like that. Like you weren't able to kind of catch it. And again, it's like I think it's a really great song. And just the fact that it's about just being drunk, being flat out drunk.
They take that word Wasted and play on it in the video, because they made a music video for this, and it was actually seemingly selected as the not officially commercially released single, but there was a promo CD sent around to radio stations, and in there you get a sense of this kind of like wasted youth.
Yeah, what's the video, what happens?
It's kind of like footage of just groups of people posing as if they're posing for like old photographs that you would get in a supermarket or a mall. You know, those kind of like cheesy, tacky family portraits.
Yeah, that's cool.
But they're all kind of a bit subverted. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people with like freaky eyes and things like that. It's cool, and it's got a kind of like retro VHS glitchy kind of style to it.
Okay, that sounds good.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
Yes, it's genuinely a good track. And then this takes us to The Mule. Let's check it out. The Mule. So again, it's a simple beat. It's very effective. And yeah, it's kind of more about the chorus. I do love what the guitar does here, though. It's quite, again, it's catchy and like almost, don't want to say poppy, it's just catchy. And then it goes into that dark riff that I'd have probably wanted the verses to do more. But instead, they're just a bit more of a preamble to the chorus. Harmonies in the chorus are great as well. Really lift it. And yeah, just genuinely a good song. And this takes us to Negative Space. Let's have a listen to the Negative Space. So this song is it's really raw and scratchy. There's these little poppy little woos or whatever in the middle. The chord he's playing is horrible, and it's weird, and it's great. The bass and the drums are really at the forefront here, to be honest, which is nice. And the guitar is kind of more about creating this overriding sense of unease. There's a lot of variety here, subverting expectations, I should say. And then meeting expectations as well in a really strange way. It's satisfying and unsatisfying at the same time. There's just lots of variety. They play with the quality a lot. They make things sound dirty, and then, you know, then suddenly it all comes in quite clear and loud. It's just a really interesting song, and it's, I think it's quite a good way to end it. And it shows the kind of, you know, what Mets are good at, to be honest, like creating a raw sound, still keeping it catchy, mucking around with, you know, what's deemed punk or post rock or noise or whatever, and all this stuff. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I like that. Like you said, it's kind of a bit nastier, a bit uglier. It makes me think of something that could have come out in the early 90s on Amphetamine Reptile. It's kind of it's a bit twisted,
right? I agree. Yeah, it's quite a cool one to end on, but then it doesn't really end here. We've got a weird song that comes in a little bit afterwards, a secret song.
What's that song called?
It's called My Balls. I don't know what it's called. Is it, do you know what it's called?
I know what it's called.
Oh,
but
Sam's,
you know, I had
balls.
Trouble pronouncing the bassist's name earlier. I can't. Oh, this is unpronounceable.
God. For God's sake. Go on.
It's dash dash. Two kind of like closed parentheses. Another couple of dashes.
Sounds like an emoji.
Yeah.
Morse code or something.
Maybe it means something to someone.
Yeah.
Maybe it's special message to a loved one.
Well, you can't be everything to everyone.
Yeah.
So yeah, this secret song is just feedback. You know, guitar players out there, when you leave your guitar up against the amp and you get that really horrible, like, weird feedback, it's basically, imagine someone's just recorded it and thought, that sounds good, isn't it? Yes, have that at the end. It's not really a track. It kind of leaves this weird, horrible, nasty taste to the album, as if you've, like, yeah, and it's making you sit through it. And, you know, it's like, almost like it's trying to objectively make you get up and stand up and turn it off, because it's quite loud as well at one point. And yeah, what a horrible end to a rather good album. What did you think? Do you just switch it off before you even bother listening to this bit?
Yeah, I'm not a fan. I could do without it. Like I said, like you said, that closing song's really good. They should just end it on that, really. I'm not a fan of hidden tracks and stuff anyway. Kind of like, this is the album, this is the statement. Don't, like, shove things on the end.
Yeah.
Willy-nilly.
Yeah, like, when I think of, like, other secret songs, not to, you know, keep banging on about Nirvana, but Endless Nameless felt like it was an actual song. Well, it was an actual song, do you know what I mean? But, and even though it was kind of like this muckabout or whatever, it was still good. And even like Gallons of, you know, Rubbing Alcohol, Flow Through the Strip, or whatever it's called, on In Utero, I still listen to that. And even though I register the fact that they've gone, it's not really a song and we don't really want to include it, but we kind of want you guys to have it, it feels like it kind of, you know, ticks that box a little bit. Whereas, like, we don't want to make it an official an official track, but we think it's something that we quite like to include in its own way. Whereas with this, I'm a bit more like, well, they did, like, why bother?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, why indeed? Maybe somebody out there listening knows.
Yeah. Well, if you do, you can write in and tell us, because we don't know.
Maybe they're a heartfelt advocate of this track. It's their favourite thing on the album.
Have you not heard of Dash Dash Bracket Bracket Dash Dash? It's my favourite Mets song. said no one.
The initial LP, the vinyl.
Yes.
So Sub Pop at the time, I don't know when they started doing this, but it continues to this day, released something called a Loser Edition. And it's kind of basically like the first run.
Right.
And usually they come in, you know, some kind of like colour vinyl variant. So the Loser Edition of Mets came on like marbled white vinyl.
Sounds good.
With a bonus 7-inch.
Oh, yeah.
And that's got two songs on it, and they're rather good. The first one is Dirty Shirt.
Yep, I've heard that.
Which I like. It's a little bit different to the other stuff on the album. It feels a bit more like a bit more garagey to me.
Yeah, I can see that.
Really cool song. Definitely worth looking up if you like the album and you want to expand.
Yeah.
And the other one's Leave Me Out. And I really thought when this started, before the vocals come in, it sounds really Nirvana-y. Something about like the guitar tone and the atmosphere it's building. And then you get these kind of like quite clear stop-start, kind of like bashy drum beat. It makes me think of something like it's got the lurch of Oh the Guilt or Curmudgeon, something like that.
Okay, it's interesting.
Yeah, it's another cool little song if you're into that kind of sound. Really nice hidden gem. And it does feel like something that would be on a B-side, you know.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't heard that one. I might have to check it out.
So what else do you think people should be checking out if they like this record?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. A lot of people have said Jesus Lizard, which I can kind of see. Don't know.
I'm a big Jesus Lizard fan, and I can see why people say it. To a degree, it's like the overall sound. The sonic sound, the tone. But in terms of the songwriting, like, it's not as complex as the Jesus Lizard. It hasn't got all like the jazzy breaks that they've got, and it certainly hasn't got the sort of like unhinged, demented vocals of David Yao.
Yeah, it's a weird comparison. When I read it, I was like, maybe there's a whole bunch of Jesus Lizard stuff. I mean, I'm not that au fait with Jesus Lizard anyway, but I was like, oh, I kind of see it, but maybe there's like a whole bunch of stuff I'm not aware of that is actually quite Mets sounding. But yeah, maybe that's not the case then.
No, but I think people, you know, Jesus Lizard are part of that like Chicago noise rock scene of the early 90s. I think, you know, this band sits more comfortably like in the Minneapolis kind of sound, like I said earlier, Amphetamine Reptile Records. Like, if you like this, personally, I would kind of like check out other Amrep bands, Unsane, Hammerheads, they all spring to mind.
It's interesting.
And then obviously it's like, it's so clearly rooted in Washington hardcore of the 80s.
Yeah.
So if you're listening to this and you don't know and haven't listened to early Black Flag, then do that, because that is like the touchstone for a lot of punk, noise, alternative rock, everything basically that then came, that was guitar based in the 90s, that wasn't hair metal.
Yeah. I was trying to think of like other contemporary ones. And I actually had a really hard time. I was thinking about what we spoke about the other day with like Eagles. And that kind of fits it a little bit. Not quite as intense, but it's, you know, still there. And also a band who I think you hate, but that we actually saw support Mets. I can't remember where, Camden Underworld, I think it was. Called Bad Breeding. Basically a bunch of British chaps who spit out these songs, and it's just as fast, it's just as frantic, it's not quite as melodic, but it's very like, it's still quite dark and punky and noisy. And yeah, it kind of, I don't know, I think of things like maybe, I don't know, Fat White Family.
Yeah, in part, some of their stuff's a bit more, I don't know, they've got a lot
it's
more
a bit
going
more different
on.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I'm trying to think of things that have like,
well, I was thinking of Idols.
Yeah,
like, I don't really, sorry, doing really well at the moment. They're getting like quite a lot of attention in the UK. You can see their posters around London,
yeah,
advertising their gigs and records and things, and because that's quite, I don't want to make it sound like this is one dimensional, but you know, bands like Jesus Lizard, Fat White Family, I think there's a bit more of their influences on show in the music they make. Idols is very, it feels quite straight up, it is nasty, visceral,
yeah,
noisy punk rock.
I don't really like Idols. I don't know, like a lot of people, it's one of those bands where like people come up and like, you know, oh, you'll like them. I'm just like, I can't get on board with it. I just don't, I think it, maybe it's his voice, I don't know.
Yeah, I liked the record I heard from a few years ago. I can't remember what it was. Was it Brutalism, I think?
Okay.
Was that them?
No idea, I don't know. Maybe I should go back and have a listen.
Yeah, do it. Check it out.
Yeah, so lasting impressions of this album. It's one of the few albums that I constantly return to, no matter what. I mean, after this, they released, two, if you want to call it, Metz 2. The sequel.
Oh yeah.
Which again had some really great songs on, but it was a, whereas this it's has a lot of hits, and it's all the songs are pretty much at least okay to good. With the second album, I feel like there's a few duds that really kind of bring the average down, let's say. And some of the tracks like The Swimmer, I think is on that album. Really great tracks, but I don't know. And maybe we'll do another episode on it. And Strange Piece again. There's, for me, there was only like one or two standout songs from that album. And it's that classic thing of like, you know, Interpol, for instance, who I love, Do It Too, where first album, every track is like amazing. It's got that sound and you love it. And then each subsequent album, there's less and less cool songs on it, if that makes sense. So it's not that there's like, it's a dud album really, or you know, there's an album where it's just like, this is just plain shit, but it will be the further along they go and the more they release, there's like less and less of those, you know, hits, as it were, those kind of good tracks. And I'm kind of feeling like Metz might be going down that route a little bit. That might be a bit, I hope they're not listening. That might be a little bit,
I think we can be pretty sure they're not listening.
Yeah, true.
Along with the
along
rest
with
of
everyone
the
else in the world,
educated world. A band like this, their impact does diminish, I think, the more maybe you listen to new material.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure I even listened to Strange Piece.
Yeah, we were talking about this.
Because looking now, this would be on paper right up my alley. Talking about the like Jesus Lizard and the Chicago sound. This was produced by Steve Albini, and it was recorded at his studio, Electrical Audio.
Oh, really?
I'm not sure I've even listened to this at all.
It's good. It's not great. It's okay. Out of the three, I'd say it's the worst one.
Sometimes Albini doesn't mesh with bands. You know, like he was meant to do Fugazi's In on the Kill Taker.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's a whole leak of demos that they did with Steve Albini.
What happened?
And they both just said it wasn't working. Like, there was no bad blood. Just professionally, they were like, well, it didn't really work out. So they Fugazi went off and did the album.
I mean, Fugazi are a good band that, you know, people who maybe want to listen to more of this stuff as well should go and check out.
Yeah, definitely. Oh my god, yeah, Fugazi. Especially probably like Repeater, Steady Diet of Nothing. and in on the Kill Taker, although at that point they start to become a little bit more experimental.
Yeah. Some good stuff out there. But yeah, they're still playing around the world. They've got another album coming out soon. And they're doing really well. I think, and I hope they do bring out some more stuff. But there is that element, like you just said, where you've kind of got your kind of backed up into a corner a little bit here now. Like, where do you go?
Yeah, I'd like to see them maybe incorporate some new elements into their sound. Although that's always, it's a bit dangerous.
Yeah, it's really dangerous, especially with something where, like, if you think about this album, the ones that we like are like ones that are just simple and cool and just have a bit more to it without getting too experimental, because they've kind of done that, and we kind of saw them do that a bit last week with like these big, like, felt like 5 minute or whatever, like, you know, just wank basically, which is kind of kind of fine.
I liked it. I like a bit of wank.
Yeah.
It was kind of like that kind of like reverby, slightly psychedelic guitar feedback jam that started to remind me a little bit of like the OCs, that kind of thing.
Okay.
I'm not saying they should go, you know, we're going to be psychedelic garage band, but I wouldn't mind a little bit more of that kind of experimental sound in there.
Yeah.
Start building a bit more space into some tracks. I don't know.
Yeah, well, let's see. So, Dan, that's it for today. Where can people reach you?
Dreadful Discs on Instagram and on YouTube, coming soon.
Coming soon. And thank you very much for joining us today. for any new Winter fans, firstly, I should say that if you can go to patreon.com/newwinter, then you can sign up to some special bits and pieces on there, which sound very interesting. And you get to support the show, which is great. And you can follow us on Twitter @newwinter. We've also now got an Instagram @newwinter as well. You can email us newwinterpodcast@gmail.com. But yeah, do again, if you can rate and review us on your podcast platform of choice, that's great. If you've got $1, $3, $5, $100, $5,000 that you can kind of put towards the show, that's great. And you can get stuff back for that. Again, go to patreon.com/newwinter. I will stop plugging that now. Go out and check out Metz, because it's a good album. And if they're playing live near you, I highly recommend going to see them. So that's it for now. Thanks very much, guys. See ya.
Bye.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both as twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in...
opinions.
We do that in every episode, too.
We're professional unprofessionals, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.